afternoon, gardeners. You're listening to Garden Planet with your host, Selena. And today we have a very special guest. Welcome, Chris Ballantyne, who is from Second Nature. He's the director of Second Nature, a gardening company in Auckland. But he is also the spokesperson for River Care. And River Care is all about our rivers and looking after them and the significance of our rivers for Auckland. So, Chris, tell us all about River Care.
Okay. Hello, listeners. Hello, gardeners, fellow gardeners. So, I live on the banks of Te Waiapareira, Henderson Creek. It's been a issue for a number of years, the level of contamination and pollution. And a couple of years ago, we formed a community group that is dedicated to restoring the Māori or well-being of our awa, Te Waiapareira, Henderson Creek.
And that's where I live too. My home is just off one of the branches of it, Huru Huru Creek. And, yeah, it's been part of my life ever since I've lived there. So very important for us gardeners. Now, just to backtrack a bit, some of our listeners, you might have heard me and Karen speak a few weeks ago about our streams and our rivers, and we touched on what we can do to look after our streams and rivers that may back onto our properties. But I wanted to go a bit deeper. That's why, Chris, I'm so glad you're here with us today to talk about this. So I just wanted to share a story about the rivers, what they mean to us as Kiwis, and then we'll just have a kōrero about all the things that it brings up for us today. How about that?
Sounds like fun.
Okay. So, I'm a bit of a librarian, so I got this book because I wanted to research a bit more about it, called Faces of the River. It's by David Young and Bruce Foster, and its subtitle is New Zealand's Living Water. And it had a little introduction, just to get us into the mindset of the rivers here in New Zealand. So I'll just read from here. It is said, the rivers that rise in the central North Island are descendants of the great mountains that abide there. Among their responsibilities, they bear the great gifts of well-being. As little children, they played happily, but later there was rivalry. One day, they decided upon a race to the sea, and beforehand, each busied himself in planning a likely route. Kept secret, the better to enjoy victory. Upon the eventful day, amidst much excitement, the great volcano Tongariro gave vent to a mighty roar, and the race was underway. But to the amazement and disbelief of the startled assembly of mountains, the children were seen to race off in every conceivable direction, north, south, east and west. For the distant sea was all encircling, and each had guarded his secret well. Now the bewildered parents were also the judges and struggled to keep them all in view. But peering and teetering this way and that, they soon gave up and turned instead to cheer on their favourites. Very soon there was such a din from their leaping and shouting that they caused a great pile of dust to rise high in the sky, blotting all from view. When the dust finally cleared, the race had been to run, and to this day there has not been a winner. We are left instead with the proud boast of each river. Each vows that he won. Of their progress, stories have come to be told. Of the Waikato, it is said that he went north, the favourite big brother of many smaller children. They cried after him, "Wait for us, wait for us, we're coming too." And so it was, the kindly Waikato, gently strong, would turn at intervals to wait, whilst the little ones caught up. Of the Whanganui, it is said that he laid plans with great skill. He moved north and west with the passing sun to follow the broad path of his great uncle, the mighty volcano Taranaki, proud sentinel of the western seaboard. The Rangitiki left from his chosen place on the slopes of the Kaimawanas, heading off to the southwest with great bounding strides that seemed to defy gravity. And so each story is told, each stream to his own. Of the Whangahau, it is said that he is normally gentle when angered, is of violent mood. Upon the morning of the event, he was sitting at the Wharepaku, the toilet, when suddenly Tongariro's start signal shattered the still morning air. He gave such a start that he fell in with a splotch and rose amidst laughter and glee. Turning in anger, he roared blindly down the mountainside. Stubbing his toe on a large boulder only served to increase his anger, and he veered southward in a violent rage. He was last seen by the amused gallery, freshing his way through the countryside, looking twice his size as he carted all before him on the way to the sea. It is also said that maybe, just maybe, he had won. To this day, the rivers still ply their chosen courses as they flow from the hinterlands across the great bosom of Te Ika a Māui. And that is by Rakato Te Rangiita Ngāti Tuwhare Toa. So there you go, there's a little history, a little story about our rivers. And yeah, the rivers have a story. So what's a story with a river, Kia? How, is that, have we got a story to that one, Chris?
Well, yeah, there's a long story. there's a national conversation going on about our major rivers and especially our rivers in the provinces and how they are being compromised by the intensification of farming. Mm. So the farming sector's got a lot of bad press.
Yes.
I don't think it's appropriate that our urban population occupies any high moral ground.
No.
Our urban rivers, especially in West Auckland, are very unhealthy. They're highly polluted. And there's a lot of work to do in that space. So our national conversation around rivers needs to be both rural and urban.
Mm.
Our journey began, funnily enough, in your awa, in your mm-hmm. backyard,
yes.
with the Huruhuru,
yeah.
Which is a tributary of Henderson Creek, Te Waipareira. And one of our group members was kayaking one morning following Ofa the sea leopard, who sometimes inhabits Ooh. Our awa,
yes.
At a respectful distance, of course, and followed her up the Huruhuru at a very low tide and noticed a lot of matter in the water and went, I wonder what that is. At first, they assumed it was fish. On closer inspection, it was the outpouring of a ruptured sewerage pipe, a major transmission line that was spewing sewerage and other horribles that people flush down the toilet into the awa. And that really is what spurred us into action. We found the response of the authorities responsible for the river, shall we say politely, less than ideal.
Mm.
And so that has galvanised us into action as a community to get stuck in and try and make a difference. It's an enormous project. Sometimes it can be a little bit disheartening, the sheer magnitude of what we're dealing with, but we see it as an intergenerational project. We've had 170 years where the health of the river has been compromised since the clearance of the forests.
Mm.
Intensive horticulture with its sprays, the land clearance with sedimentation, industrial runoff, stormwater runoff, and sewerage pourings into the river. So there's a lot of work to be done, but we shouldn't shy away from that.
I guess when we're thinking about rivers, we tend to think, oh, the big ones, Waikato and Rangitiki. But here in Auckland, they all stem from the ranges or out west. And there's so many different streams of them, aren't there, going toward the sea and the harbour.
Yes, and our group, we focus on Te Waipareira simply because it's manageable in scope. If we were to take on the whole headwaters of Te Waipareira running right up into the Waitakere Ranges, it would be a massive undertaking. Mm. I think the catchment is something in the vicinity of 13,000 hectares. A lot of it is intensely urbanised.
Yes.
So it is, our waterway is collecting the runoff from thousands and thousands of properties, hundreds of acres of asphalt and concrete. So, you know, it is a huge project, and we can all make a difference if we start to own what goes down the stormwater and straight into our streams and rivers.
Yes, because every house has, of course, roof collecting rainwater every time it rains, and then driveways, roads, drainage from that. All going down into eventually the streams. and there's no sort of filterage, and when it rains really heavily, it all comes down and overflows, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's if you look at how nature manages, slows and filters rainfall, to try and cover this off quickly, if you've got a vegetated surface, it rains, the vegetation catches the rain. Mm. Once the surface is saturated at capacity, it drips down onto the ground. The ground in a forest environment has a humus layer which absorbs more of that water. When that becomes saturated, it infiltrates the soil profile. When that's saturated, then it makes its way into the water table and our waterways. In an urban environment, you go from a concrete drive or an asphalt surface or a roof, and within minutes, that water is into a urban waterway, often reaching the water full of surface pollutants and at velocity. So at that velocity is also a problem, because you get that's where you get stream bank erosion.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a few issues. One of the things we notice in our awa is that when we have long dry periods, the river is reasonably clean. And the moment we get a heavy rainfall event, you see an oil slick on top of the river. And it can be quite extensive. And we believe that that is particulate matter washed off the roads.
Yeah.
Primarily from diesel vehicles, which are quite polluting. So that's one of the things we need to think about, is that our roads are trapping a lot of micro pollutants, and that is going straight into our harbours, streams and the ocean.
Mm.
And, you know, we need to start owning that and tidying up that part of our act. Like I said, big project.
Sounds huge, because so many roads in Auckland and always lots of rainfall, so it's kind of like disasters waiting to happen.
We tend to focus on what I would call gross pollutants, which, you know, are your plastic bottles, yeah, and the toys and the takeaway wrappers and all that stuff that we see. That's the very visible part of pollution. Of equal concern should be the invisible components of pollution.
Yes, because that will go into the seas, and, of course, when all the fish and all the wildlife, they are swimming in it, and, yeah, it goes into the food chain. And of course, if you love seafood as I do, that's not going to be good in the long run. When I was thinking of this, I was thinking, what a huge problem. And I don't know about you, Chris, but have you heard of permaculture?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes? Yeah. Are you a practitioner of it?
No, I'm not a permaculture practitioner. I am in my home garden, I am an organic gardener.
Yeah.
But I am not a permaculture gardener.
Oh, okay. Permaculture is, along with gardening, is a type of gardening. It's also to do with design of spaces to live in harmony with the agriculture. But it's sort of kind of hard to explain. But designing so that we can live sustainably with the earth. So it takes into account not just gardening practices, but building design, infrastructure, composting systems, and closing the loop of waste, and all that kind of thing. And permaculturalists like to design things so that it can be sustainable. So they would, when designing, say, a permaculture property, look into, like, solar power and rainwater tanks and then rain gardens and all that type of thing all together. So when I think of how the Auckland Council might look into infrastructure, and when they're doing all the roads and everything, they might want to take in some of those permaculture principles. So, yeah, that's a little snippet of permaculture. But because I have learned a bit of permaculture and they look at all different things. One of the things that struck me about it was, what about roading that could be permeable? Which means, like, when it rains, instead of rushing off the surface of the roads down into the sea unfiltered, the roads could absorb the rainwater, just like soil can.
Okay, look, in my when I'm not doing river care, yeah. I am a proprietor of a landscape company. One of the products that we are licensed to install is a permeable paving system called Stoneset.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's absolutely fantastic system where the top surface is bound and porous, and then you have what we call a permeable or porous base course. And that enables the water to filter through the surface, through the gravel bed underneath it, acting as a filter, and then into either the soil or into drainage systems that slowly release the water. The challenge with permeable systems is they are very expensive to install.
Yeah.
So they're fabulous. They are quite high maintenance because you have to keep the pore space open, which means you need specialist equipment that cleans the surface and sucks the fine organic matter out, because otherwise the surface simply blocks.
It will block up.
Yeah, so it's that is a challenge. But there are a raft of solutions. You know, there's drainage swales, there's rain gardens, there's sedimentation ponds and wetlands that can all act as filtration systems for the crud that washes off our surfaces.
And
what we can't be doing and continuing to do is discharging our pollution straight into our rivers and harbours. I think in recent history, we've treated the oceans, streams and rivers as sort of, they're infinite. You know, we can just keep putting stuff into it and there's no feedback loop. Well, the feedback loop is now becoming obvious when we're finding plastic matter, and great mats of it floating in our ocean, microplastics in the fish, the pollutants, acidification of the water, all these things that are happening, it isn't infinite. And if we don't look after it, we will have to face down the consequences as a species, and it's going to be ugly.
Yeah. Like the coral reefs, they're bleaching, and they're saying the seas are acidifying, as you mentioned, which isn't good for wildlife at all. So it's really a horrible thing that we have to face, and we need to do stuff about it. So, yeah, it just sounds a bit depressing and doom and gloom at the moment.
But I think, yes, it is easy to get despondent, and we have to have a message of hope. And I think that what I'd like to call out to the wider community is just get stuck into a project in your local community. A few hours a week and you can make a real difference.
Mm.
You can't build infrastructure. As individuals, we can't build infrastructure. We can't notionally save the world. But what we can do is a little bit in our own backyards that will make an incremental difference. A little bit of change in our behaviour and get stuck in with a local community group doing some trapping, doing some planting, cleaning up the rivers, giving the authorities and the politicians a bit of a reminder about what is important to us.
As you say, in our own little backyards, as we're gardeners, we're all gardeners here. So what can we do as gardeners and make little changes that would help as collective as we start gardening and thinking about these things?
I just don't think we can underestimate the value of plants and trees in terms of attempt to remediate the landscape.
Mm.
The benefits of vegetation, is pretty obvious.
Yeah.
And what we've seen in Auckland with the relaxing of tree protections is a mass destruction of our treescape,
oh,
and that is truly sad. Trees are magnificent. They are the lungs of the earth. I know it sounds a little trite, but without them, there would be no life. No. And yet we blithely go around cutting them down when they inconvenience us.
Yeah.
And yet they are the source of life, one of the sources of life.
As you said, like all the vegetation, when the rain comes, it will absorb all the rainwater. And with trees, that canopy, I mean, just having that canopy will deflect a lot of the rain, and roots absorbing all the rain as well. So if we cut all those trees down, water's just hitting straight down, having nowhere to feed, really. What are we doing? Does Auckland have a... Does it used to have a green belt or anything? Was there no protection at all?
Formerly there was no protection. Then under the Resource Management Act, there was tree protection. And so to take down trees of a certain size, a certain girth, you needed a resource consent. And probably 10 years ago, that was relaxed. And unless a tree is protected, you pretty well have the right to take it down.
Oh,
and
dear.
So we've seen the denuding of many of our suburbs, and a lot of the loss of big trees. I know that there's a community group fighting hard in Avondale to save some magnificent, probably 80-year-old native trees on a property that's been earmarked for development. Given what we know and the challenges that we face, I find it incredible that kind of decision-making is still happening.
That's
but
weird.
Here we go. You know, people consider trees a inconvenience, and we really need to change how we think about that.
And you think about trees, they're sucking up all that water because they have to go up that big trunk. That's a lot of water being absorbed out of the, you know, out of the waterway. The runoff. They're our biggest pumps, I mean.
Oh, look, you know, they're truly magnificent. And I just, as an aside, I'm reading at the moment a book called Overstory.
Yes.
And for gardeners and lovers of trees and lovers of the natural world, just a big shout out and recommend that. It's an amazing book. You know, it talks about the interaction between humans and trees, humans and biology. It's a novel, but it's there's plenty of science in it, and it's a precautionary contemporary tale that's well worth a read. So there you go, Overstory.
Overstory, I've got to write that one down. Okay, thanks, Chris. I'm going to mention composting toilets. Sorry, I might have just sprung that on you. But because a lot of our runoff is to do when it rains really hard and then sewage overflows, as you were saying, when you were kayaking and all this stuff was coming out, it was horrible. I don't know where that pipe was. Was it sort of right near the waterway or underneath it?
It was underneath it.
Okay,
and was only visible at a very low tide.
Oh, dear.
So without going into too many gory details, what's interesting is that the human waste and the toilet paper dissolve quickly and they do disappear. It's far from ideal. But what we're left with is your wet wipes and the sanitary products and contraceptive devices. I'll leave that up to your imagination. Within a square metre, there were hundreds of these items basically made out of plastic. Hundreds of them in one single square metre adjacent to that discharge.
Yeah.
So when we get discharges, it's not just about the organic matter, it's about all the plastics.
To state
the obvious, I'm sure that a lot of our listeners are mindful, environmentally conscious people, but have a wee think about what goes down the dunny, eh? You know, some of that stuff just ends up in our harbour and in the ocean.
Dear.
And so this is a behaviour that we can change. I am amazed that those products that are not fully biodegradable are still on the market and claiming to be flushable and all the rest of it. It just appalls me and it's cynical.
Why should they be sold? There should be a law against it even being allowed
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because technically, of course, they're flushable. You flush them?
Yeah.
Watercare run a campaign against them because it's very hard for them to process. They have to be filtered out at the treatment pond end. They block the pumps and they block the pipes. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure the devil had a hand in designing them.
And then I see these nets out of any kind of outlet into the waters, catching all that rubbish coming out, and it's huge. Anyway, so that's with our river care group. Do we test our rivers? Like, do we do scientific tests on the health of our rivers on a regular basis?
Okay, so one of the things that we've been as a group been involved in is trying to get that baseline scientific testing, so we know what we're dealing with. We've been working closely with Safe Swim. I'm sure many of the listeners are familiar with that. Yep. It's a website you go to, and they've done some amazing modelling that charts and maps what happens hydrologically to pollution in the harbour after a rain event. And so you can simply go to the website and it'll tell you what beaches in the inner harbour and in the outside the harbour in the Hauraki Gulf that are safe to swim in. And so we've been doing community testing for Safe Swim, and we've got two sites on our awa at Chapman and Taipari Strand that will be hopefully become live in the next few months. Mm-hmm. We have to gather a lot of data to build the to help them build the model. Yeah. So we're working on that. And, you know, in our as part of our objective, we'd like to have independent testing done on a regular basis. It's expensive and we need funding for that. Mm. But that's, you know, that's what we want. We want our community to know when it's safe to go into the river. And, you know, our early evidence is that the levels of contamination, coli contamination, are incredibly high after rain events. Mm. So, you know, we've got people, we've got sea scouts, we've got kayaking, we've got rowing, we've got water skiing. In summer, we've got people swimming, fishing on the river. It's not ideal. So we want to make sure that our community knows what the state of the river is while the authorities do some work to fix the tide infrastructure.
I was thinking one thing that could help is weather reports and doing like little stats on the health of our river and the how much we've got in the dams just every day, so it's people are aware.
Yes, yeah, that was the thing, that one of the things, that going back to that Huruhuru discharge, is that people didn't know and no one was owning communicating with the community. There were people a kilometre away from a major outflow having a bit of a splash around, blissfully unaware of what was happening upstream.
Okay.
And, you know, it took a bit of work for us to get signage up and let the people know, you know, really not safe to go in the awa right now.
Oh, dear. We're just nearly out of time, Chris, but where can we go to find out more about Riverkey? What's the website there?
Rivercaregroup.org.
Yep.
We've got a new website. A lot of work's been done on it. We hope that will be a repository of information about the river, talking about its history, the challenges it faces, what we're doing as a group, lots of lovely blogs where people talk about their experiences and life on the river. So, yeah, have a look at that. And we've got a Facebook group.
Yep, join the Facebook group. We'll put that on the Garden Planet website, Facebook group as well. And so you're all informed. Well, thank you, Chris, for sharing all about the rivers and what we can do. I'm sure there's so much more we can talk about, so we might have to have you back again another time. Thanks for listening, everyone. Go out and garden and, yeah, plant more trees. Thanks, everyone. Happy gardening.
Thanks, Helena.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page, or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.